All right. So tonight we have an illustrious speaker, and I've known him for a couple years now, I think, and he is an AA buddy of mine, and I'm very happy to hear him speak tonight. His name is Matt L., and his home group is the Churchland Group, so please give him a round of applause.
Hi, I'm Matthew Loveless, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is March 28th, 2016. I have a home group. It's just a home group. My sponsor knows he's my sponsor, and I have sponsees that I help take through this program. Experience, strength, and hope. Again, very grateful to be here. Thank you, Jake. Just hope at the end I'm as useful as possible. So with that experience, I was born a twin. That does not make me an alcoholic, but it was pretty awesome because I grew up with a best friend. But with that being said, I mean, I came from a divorced home. That doesn't make me an alcoholic. I came from abusive parents. That doesn't make me an alcoholic, right? I had an okay upbringing for the most part, you know, nothing too crucial that I'm like, that makes me an alcoholic, right? But as a child, I was very rambunctious. I got into little things. I remember the first time I ever had a consequence, because I didn't really know what they were. I remember that someone knocked on my mother's like door and like outside, and I wanted to see who it was. And for whatever reason, she was not letting me, and I was throwing a temper tantrum. And I had this croquet mallet, you know, the croquet with the two loops, and you hit one ball through the loop, and then you like put them together, and then one goes all the way that way. It's pretty cool. I had the mallet, and I just looked at the living room window, and I said, I wonder what happened if I smashed that window. Just the craziest thought. And I smashed that window. And I don't think that it was out of anger. I think it was just purely like, what would happen, you know? And that's the story of my life, just doing shit to see what would happen. And needless to say, ran into the bedroom, put on a bunch of pairs of underwear, and got ready for the butt whooping of my life, and never came, funny enough. And so, from that, I mean, I guess I kind of learned a lesson there, but we'll see. I don't normally learn any lessons. So, with that being said, I mean, I kind of showed you the kind of kid I was. In the way of, I was very hyper. My mother was a single mother for a long time, mother of three kids. I don't fault her for this. I understand she did the best of what she could at the time, but I was heavily medicated. There's a lot of adverse side effects to these medications. One of them, I remember, I saw double. Like, I was one of the Ritalin, Vyvanse, serotonin, whatever, guys. One of them, I would see double, and I remember I was, you know, wanting to be a hard worker and mow my uncle's lawn because he was out of town. And they always gave it to me the second day or like midway throughout the day, and I kept on telling my parents, hey, like, this makes me feel weird. I don't want to take this. And they said, you know, take this. I'm like, okay. And I remember I mowed my Uncle Ricky's lawn, and when he came back from out of town, he's like, what the F? My, like, you missed like this spot, that spot, this spot. And I was telling everyone, like, I see double, like, you guys think I'm crazy, right? And here I am, like, and I gave that law my best, God, I was mowing with one eye. Like, just doing my best, you know? And I was still forced to have this medication, right? And then there was another one that I remember being beat for because I didn't want to take it because it made me fall asleep, you know? I was like, it's weird, like, I didn't want to feel tired, I wanted to be awake, I want to be alive, I want to, you know, love the world that's around me. I'm just an innocent kid, you know? And so I was force-fed that. And then eventually, you know, fifth grade, I was a B student. By sixth grade, I found Adderall. Adderall was kind of the ticket to what my parents, I think, were looking for. With that, I mean, I remember I was like maybe a buck 30, whatever. Adderall took me all the way to like $1.10, right? I'm a little kid. But I'm crushing it in school, getting straight B's. Playing sports, doing the dang thing, and looking up to my brother, looking up to my sister. I have a twin brother, right? But my mother strategically held me back in first grade, so it was always like we were worlds apart, oddly enough. He had different friend groups, I had different friend groups, but 9 minutes older he is, he's still my older brother. to me, he'll be 5 years older for the rest of my life, you know? And that's how much I'll always look up to him. He was doing good for the most part, and I was doing good for the most part. And then my mother fell into a disease, I guess, of thyroidism. I have a hypothyroidism, right? Mm-hmm. And so all I remember the night that, like, my perfect life, I could see change the trajectory of, like, doing great in school, having good friends, staying out of trouble, is we're all together having fun. Then all of a sudden my mother stopped dancing and said, I need to go to the hospital. I was like, this is weird, you know? And I couldn't understand. And then that led into, you know, her having to get, you know, cancer treatments and stuff like that on her thyroid and having that removed. And as a kid, I believe I was like 14 at the time, my father was working in D.C. coming home on the weekend, so he really wasn't there. So for the most part, me, my brother, and my sister were just off to fend for ourselves, right? And at this time, I hadn't really drank yet, but I remember shortly before I started searching for outside feelings. I remember looking out my glass window down my driveway and just being stuck with fear that, like, I want to do something, I just don't know what to do, you know? And just having this feeling of, like, I want to get outside of myself, but I can't do anything besides just stare out this window, you know? And that's a feeling I would soon get rid of, and love that I could get rid of it. I believe, I don't know which one came first, and I guess backlog, you know, around my family is a drinking family. Everything we did was drinking. I was one of those kids that was like, I enjoyed bringing the beer to Uncle Ricky. You know, if your beers are empty, I'm like 8 years old, like being a beer caddy, just, you know, wanting to feel a part of and be a part of, right? And taking a sip and being like, nah, I'm good. Instead, I just like being a part of. I didn't need to drink. And then eventually, again, 14, left of my own devices, left to any kind of friends I choose. I believe it was weed was my first fun. I don't even think I drank first, but marijuana, and it's a weird thing when the first time you smoke marijuana, and then we were all together and couldn't wait. It was after the 8th grade sock hop, right? And we all got into my friend's garage. We were blasting Pink Floyd and just laughing my butt off, dude, just rocking back and forth. It was bliss. The giggles, everything was so amazing. And then out of nowhere, boom, boom, on the garage door, like you can see it dented. And it was my dad, because he was searching for Dustin, because Dustin called my dad looking for his son. And so we were busted. And we had to walk like half a mile down to our house. The parents called the cops, did the whole scare tactics thing, and just ruined the buzz completely. And that messed me up, man. Yeah, ruined everything. And you would swear we were all doing lines off of a paid person, you know? Like it was insane, you know, of the magnitude of that weed, you know? And that didn't do it. That didn't scare me. I was more mad at the fact that how much they overreacted, that like I wasn't scared of nothing after that. Like, that's what you got? Like, bring it on. Because you're going to be gone in like 2 days, and I'm left to do whatever I want after that. And that's how I treated it. I was like, this is how you're going to treat me? Like, after everything I do, I get straight B's to do this, and like, here I am just having a little bit of fun, you know? But that's the start of my self-centeredness, my selfishness, right? That's when I started feeling like, no, the world's going to go the way I want it to go. You don't tell me how it goes, because I do everything right, in my own eyes. Creating that self-delusion that my way is the good way, you know, at a very young age. And so I started dabbling with marijuana when I could, and then finally I got a drink. And to my recollection, this is all I can remember. I remember the first night I was around some people that had drank. They all got completely crap-faced, and I was cleaning up their puke, and I was like, dude, I'm so glad I didn't drink. Like, this is stupid. I would never drink. They're like, you guys look retarded. It's ridiculous right now. And I was like, I'll be good. So, like, after that, And one night, I was hanging out with another, guess who? Dustin. Once again, Dustin came back into the story. And broke into my parents' liquor cabinet, and just went, I was like, you know what, I'll give it a shot. And I gave it a shot, gave it a couple shots, enough shots to feel the shots. And it was amazing. It was a release. It made me okay with not being okay. It gave me the feeling that no matter what happens in life, as long as I have this, I'm going to be okay. I could be on a beach, homeless, a bum, don't care. As long as I got this, I'm going to be okay. This is my new best friend. This is all I need. And it was all in that one night. Like, I knew it. Like, this is it. This is what my grandparents and my parents and everyone's drinking over is for this feeling. I get it. I want more of it too. And I spent the next probably 6 years of my life chasing that feeling over and over through many of mishaps. And at some point, I realized I'm an alcoholic, but I see my grandparents that are functioning alcoholics. They got the house, the cars, the pool, the cookouts, the people that come over, the loving family, every Thanksgiving, every Christmas. Everything's working out just fine for them. Nanny gets so crap-faced, she pukes, and her dentures get flushed down the toilet, you know? And everyone's just laughing, you know? And basically I become my grandmother. Like, I become that sort, because I think that's okay. If Danny can do it, why can't I do it, you know? And I'm just a belligerent fall-down drunk. Thinking, why isn't everybody laughing? Like, isn't this hilarious, you know? But I was okay with that shame that, I created some imagination that the drunkest guy at the party is the funnest guy at the party. Don't know why. Just did. And so from, I guess, 16 up to 18, I chased alcohol and drugs. I was a dumpster. You know, if I could get it, I used it. Very cool. Some of the stuff didn't even work, but that's okay. I would dabble with it and going into high school. And I come from a small class of, like, I think I graduated with like 100 and something people. And so I was well known in that regard. But I was still a good person. I'd come in pretty effed up, but I'd still pass out papers, you know? Like, that's just the kind of guy I was. I'd still volunteer any way I could, even though I was completely messed up, but I was happy, you know? So of course I'm gonna help out, because I'm making myself feel the way I wanna feel, not how you tell me how to feel. Not what you're gonna put me to make me feel, right? And so high school came around. I think it was 11th grade. War stories aren't worth it. 11th grade came around, went and got an underage drinking charge, and all bets were off. Mom and dad came, you know, we had that heart to heart, and they sent me to my first rehab, right? I'm 18, going to my first rehab in Navarre, Florida. I think like the night before, Joe was there. Brandon was there, my bro was there, we just had a cocktail, and I was like, guys, when I go to this rehab, I want to pee a rainbow on that test strip, you know? And I did, it was pretty impressive. They were like, dang, I was like, yeah. It was like that. Don't remember any of the feelings, but, you know, I went for it, guys. And that rehab was kind of cool in a way, but I wasn't ready. It was a break to me. At 18, I'm not ready to say alcohol won, right? I'm not ready to say that I'm an alcoholic, that I can't ever control this. At 18, I'm just thinking, like, okay, we need to dial back and reassess and get, you know, where we're going a little different of a way. Again, still my way, though, right? No surrenders ever talked or thought of. And so as soon that rehab came around, there's a couple weird things that happened there. It's like super weird, but that's just, oh, yeah. Super weird. Florida, you can just get liquor at Walmart. So dude hops the fence, hands out liquor to everybody. I even got a bottle. That was cool. but I didn't drink it. I just left it in my thing. Everybody got busted. I like snuck it out, threw it in a bush, and was like, I'm good, you know. And that's how I knew I wasn't an alcoholic, because I threw it away. You see all these other people? They're messed up. I didn't. I didn't even drink. I'm not an alcoholic. I can control this, right? And dang, I was wrong. So I get flown back after that. I think I was only there for like a month. And I don't remember anything that could have been taught worthwhile. AA was there though, right? Remember that? Do you remember AA? Don't remember what y'all are offering, what could be had, what life was to be lived in it. But I do remember, that was my first introduction into AA. So came back, called my friends immediately that night, went out, got messed up, whoo, party's back on. Hid it from my parents for a little bit, and then decided to sober up on my own, and then go back to high school. Oddly enough, I was, 18, redoing the 11th grade. Because I took the practice GED, and they were like, you can get it today. And I was like, nah, I'm good. Like, I'm pretty sure I could just get the diploma if it's this easy. And I don't know why, I was like, something in my heart just told me, like, go back to school. Like, do better for yourself. Not saying that GED isn't good. It's just, that's what was just there for me at the time. And I accepted the opportunity. And so I went back, and I was stone cold sober for a little bit. And then I found Spice, oddly enough. And thank goodness I did that when, like, it first came out, because nowadays, golly. But, that was a whole trip of its own, you know? I didn't want to drink at all. I just wanted that stuff, right? Because drinking got me in trouble. This did not. But then that came to a head, and my theater teacher came to me and said, hey, my husband's an alcoholic. He goes to these meetings. You want us to pick you up and maybe take you to one sometime? I was like, yeah, that'd be awesome. And so he took me to Overseas in Suffolk. And I remember going to that meeting and just waking out of my mind and just really culty vibes going on. Really, like, at 18, I'm just like, I'm good, guys. Like, y'all are, I'm good, guys. Because I'm 18, man. I'm like, I still got a whole life to live right now. Like, y'all look like, y'all just gave up and y'all are here doing this thing. And then we all hold hands at the end. And it's just like, it's different, guys. This is different. And I just wasn't receptive, you know. Because, again, I'm doing everything my way and trying to see everything through my own lens. Not open to any other experience or perspective. Because I'm very selfish and self-centered. But thank God she took me there. Her husband tried to sponsor me. I got drunk again and just didn't stay sober. And then 21 came around. I managed to wreak enough havoc in my life that my parents kicked me out. And when I say that, I say, like, I lived in a tent behind my parents' house where I could come in and get hot dogs and then go have a fire and just get drunk behind my parents' house. As I worked at a horse farm that I could walk through the woods to and take care of 13 stalls. So I just smelled like horse poop and pee and alcohol 24/7 for like over a year. And like, that's all I did. 24/7, clean stalls, get drunk, come back, clean stalls, get drunk, come back. And this vicious cycle. Thinking one day, this old farmer's going to give me everything he's got. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And he said that too. He's like, you get sober, all this can be yours. I crap you now, he did. He's like, my son's, he's good, he's taken care of. You get sober, all this can be yours. You see that bus back there? Well, turn that into your house if you live there and you stay sober. And I was like, no, I'm good, dude, I'm good, man. But like, he meant it. Not gonna speak on that. But yeah, that was my life for a while. And then enough became enough. I had enough, and I still wasn't convinced that I couldn't be a functioning alcoholic, because that's what I wanted, because alcohol was my medicine. It's what made me be okay being me, no matter what you said. This was my medicine. I'm not going to take the medicine you want to give me, right? Which is now God, AA, principles, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Outside perspective, that kind of medicine. Nope, alcohol. Fermentation. It's a natural process, just like marijuana that grows out of the ground, you know? I'm on that stuff, that delusion. And my parents, again, enough was enough, kicked me out. The only person that would answer the phone was my biological father that I probably hadn't seen in like 10 years. Well, you know. He said, I can't take you right now, but the grandparents will, and they're up in Maine. So my mom booked a ticket within the next day. I took a 24-hour bus ride up to Maine and wreaked havoc in their lives for about 3 months. For a long time, I couldn't even speak on this story. I just recently kind of healed from it. And we'll get to that. Wreaked havoc there, got kicked out. Finally, Dad answered again and said, yeah, sure, come on down. Came on down. He kept me sober for like 2 weeks. And I was like, come on, Dad, let me get some. And he's like, no, man, we just got to make sure we get you clean, and then, you know, we can try again. He's a raging alcoholic. Like, I'm coming downstairs, and he is, like, just singing out loud at 8 o'clock in the morning to his iPad, like, oh, you don't know this. It's just, like, insane, insane. And I'm like, yeah, that's my effing dad. Like, yeah, you know, I want to be like that, you know. I'm 21. Dad's over here. He's drunk. He's just as delusional as I am, guys. Because, like, we're over here calling up the freaking Navy to come get, like, an assessment. Maybe I can get my tail into the Navy. I'll change my whole life. So me and my dad, drunk as shit, got this recruiter in our house. Well, I'm like, David does, dude. And we were drunk, man. I'm telling you. This dude's just staring at us, man. And I took the test, and he looked at me and said, yeah, here's my card. You know, you can come back when after you do some studying. Do some studying. You and your dad, you should study together. dude, I love you, Dad. I love you. And so needless to say, I didn't join the Navy. after I wreaked havoc there, I got kicked out because of my stepmother, which I do not blame her. To this day, I can call my stepmother and not the bad words I used to say because I've grown, I've moved on. I pray for her. So with that, my last time seeing my father, we were shoving each other down the grass. I'm over here like, why are you trying to beat me up? Like, this is crazy. I just want to love you. Just love me, Dad. And you know, that drunk delusion, man. Got on a bus ride and headed back home. Mom and Dad not happy. Moving up to D.C. to live in my dad's apartment. Got messed up. They got really mad. Case closed there. And as you get a job at Stanley Steamer, just cleaning people's furniture. Like, I love that I worked there because the perspective I got showed me that, like, I don't need any of that. Because, you know, D.C., it's rich, ritzy. You know, multi-million dollar homes I'm going into, guys. I found out real quick, I don't need any of that. I'm doing rooms and no one goes in. They're like, do you think that needs to be done? I'm like, if you're going to pay for it, yeah, it needs to be done. So I'm thinking I'm a salesman, guys, you know, because full disclosure, it's all upsell, guys. As soon as they're in the house, it's upsell. Right? You don't want deodorizer, you want their price or my price. You know what I'm saying? I'll deodorize the whole place, $20. You know, I'm just a good guy like that. But now I practice principles of honesty where I would not do that. And I owe Santa Steamer some money. So. I was doing that for a little bit. And then I come in, smell like alcohol. Again, I believe this is probably a week after my dad whooped my ass one more time inside the apartment. I just remember the banging and the upstairs neighbor like, doo, doo, doo. We were roughhousing, and I remember pouring that thing down the drain, and be like, see, Dad, I'm quitting, and then, like, going back into my partner, in the closet, and just drinking some more, being okay with myself, I just gotta be by my dad, he doesn't know one loves me, and again, this is how I treat the old me, this is not how I treat myself now, right, and just full of self-pity, I got sick and tired of being sick and tired. So coming up on the age of 24, for whatever reason, I made a promise to my mother that at 24, if I didn't get sober, I'll just go to rehab. Now, multiple times before, when I tried to get sober, I'd be on my knees praying demons off of me, right? Just like the insanity that would ensue, the night sweats that would happen for weeks on end. F that, you know, like the fear of getting sober overcame death at a few points. But I had made a promise to my mom, and I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. I truly was. I had the gift of desperation. I spent too many nights playing a song on repeat, crying, and getting blackout drunk, thinking that there was something God was trying to tell me in this song. That's my insanity. That's my psychosis. I'm still recovering from that today. I called up my mom. I said, okay, you're right. I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to live this way anymore. Because if I'm this crazy, I need to go somewhere where I can find help. Because I don't want to die, because I heard if you die, you go straight to hell. And I'm not doing that. I'm glad I had that fear in me, even if it's realistic or not. But because that's what got me sober. I remember my work, I go into my work, I'm like, hey, I'm gonna have insurance, is there a way that I can utilize this? And he was like, oh, of course, Matthew. And he was more than happy to help. More than happy to help. Because at the end of the day, you know, I showed up. That's about all you can ask for from me. And I got into this program. I remember I took a train, a subway over to this place. It was the Phoenix House in Arlington, the Baltic area. And I remember I went in, did the intake, and she's like, "Okay, you ready to go now?" I said, "No, I can come on Monday. I gotta go to work and do this." And she's like, "I'm pretty sure you should go right now." I was like, "No, but I promise I'll be here Monday. Like, don't even worry, right?" Which is like hindsight from her perspective. Like, yeah, that is pretty clear. Like, you're not gonna be back. That's crazy. But like I freaking meant it. I was ready because I knew I could no longer be an alcoholic, right? At 24 years old, I had taken my path as far as it would take me. I'm a dead-end homeless drunk. Just the way it is, and I accepted that, right? I accepted that this is as far as myself can take myself. I need something else. And I'm gonna need to get sober to figure out whatever that is. I can't be an alcoholic, whatever, you know? And I gave up. I gave up. The night before I went into rehab, I said a really good prayer. Woke up next morning, took my last club tail, slammed it, looked in the mirror, and said, "You got this." And then friggin' went in, did the intake, and I go back to the psychosis, the paranoia, the insanity that went through my mind, why I couldn't get sober. And I'm saying, guys, I climbed a ladder in the middle of the night to check the light bulb, because that bulb doesn't work. It faces that way because that's the way they're coming in. So why doesn't the light bulb work? That's the insanity I was drinking. And I woke up the next day in that rehab after saying a long, good prayer, relieved of all of that. Relieved of the craving to drink. Relieved of the rabbit holes that my mind would start from the moment I awake to the moment I sleep. Of just the horribleness, things of your mind could possibly conjure of this world and how evil and hideous and insidious it is. Right? That's what I was drinking away. And I woke up the next day by the grace of God to that miracle. And because of that miracle, I have tangible evidence that there is a power greater than myself that restored me to sanity. Step three took a lot longer, but in that rehab, I was only there for 2 weeks. I met a couple friends. They're all dead now, sadly enough. But it was really cool. A dude brought in a meeting. He said, "Hey, call me when you get out of this meeting." I said, "All right, guaranteed." And called him. He said, "When you're getting out?" I said, "I think they're going to let me out like 4 o'clock. He said, "All right, sweet. I get off at 3. I'll come pick you up. We'll go hit a meeting. We'll go to a party after." I'm like, "All right. I don't think we should go to a party, but all right. Your thing, dude." So in Northern Virginia, there's a very alive and well scene. Young people scene, if you will. And I crapped out, went to my first few meetings, and it was all people my age, 24, a little younger, a little older. But it was a group of very beautiful, like-minded individuals that all just wanted to get sober. And that's what got me sober, was the community and the fellowship of AA. My first few years, I didn't really work the steps too hard. I did a really poopy fourth. That, looking back, I gave it everything. Or in the moment, I gave it everything. Looking back, I did. It was a poopy fourth, you know? But by the grace of God, I stayed sober. Made a few women my God, and that kept me sober for a little bit. And made a couple meetings my God, and that kept me sober for a little bit. But I hit 90 meetings in 90 days, probably 180 meetings in 180 days in 365. I didn't miss one. I was a meeting maker that made it. And I tell you this, and I mean that. I loved what y'all had. I loved what you brought me, what you gave me with your smiles. For the first time in my life, I felt accepted for who I was as I was. And that's what got me sober, right? Now, after about 3 years of the program, we're 26 at the time, I guess, is when I found a God of my understanding, truly, of the organized religion part, if you will, and I decided to pursue that. And there was a lot of comfort in that. I realized I was going to these meetings for all the wrong reasons, and I didn't have the right people in my life to be able to navigate to different meetings to get other substance other than just a bunch of clicks and cliches and gossips and just, you know, happenings, you know, social, you know. I couldn't go get substance. I didn't know where to find that substance. And so I found the substance in church. And in the meantime, my grandmother had passed away, and I come down for the funeral, and I met a beautiful girl at my grandmother's funeral. I looked at Uncle Danny. I called him Uncle Danny because he was best friends with my actual uncle. And I said, that's yours? He said, yeah, bud. I said, oh, that's cool, man. Where do you live? He said, this. Invited me to church. I said, bet, I'll be there. And I go to church that Sunday. She looks at me. I look at her. She's on stage. I was like, dude, she works here? He's like, yeah, she's here every Sunday. I said, I'm going to be here every Sunday. and I looked at him. And I said, sir, like, may I try? Again, I'm living in Northern Virginia at the time.
Yeah.
And he said, go for it, buddy. So I went for it. I quit the crap out of her. And it took me 3 months to quit all AA up there, to just walk out on my job, and just move back in with mommy to court the crap out of this girl. Now, I didn't have a job lined up on the way down, but I'm sober, I'm on fire, nothing can touch me. And nothing did for a while. Until about, we got court, engaged, married, and we did that really cool thing where you don't live together before you get married. I think they call it, like, you know, whatever. So our first time living together, we were married, you know. So we did 2 years, and it was just a guessing game if we were really going to work out. And we're working out. And that's where the selfishness and self-centeredness really started rooting. And I was not working a program. I put that woman through 4 years of probably just complete untreated alcoholism, right? But because, you know, I paid the bills, I made sure she was satisfied and whatever monetary need, and I felt as though loving me, right? You know, oh, you want to paint pictures? We'll paint pictures, you know, all this. But then it's like, what are you going to do for me, you know, after all that? I never loved without expectation. It was always like, what can I get out of this now? Because I love you so much, I need to feel like you love me this much, you know? And she loved me until I could love myself, and I didn't know that's what she was doing. I don't think she knows that's what she was doing. But that's how beautiful God is. He just works it out for the best. And that's my testimony to me being sober up to 8.5 years. It was just all God just keeping me on whatever track he had me on. Because it was the will of God that I'm standing here right now, sober, after everything I went through. My brother ended up getting messed up. And he ended up going to rehab, and I said, okay, let me try AA again, so where when he comes out, I'll be able to, like, have a group and network for him. And that'll be good. And so I did, and then little did I know, him going to rehab was mainly for me to get back into AA. Joke's on you, dude. because I found something here that I didn't find up there, and I didn't find down here when I was 18. I found actual substance, actual people working the program that knew how to live a life that I didn't and were happy living that life. And they, for what I could see, had surrendered to a new way of life. Because the best me has a wife that wants to sleep at a hotel than come home, even though I'm not abusive, I'm not verbally abusive. I'm just like that effing delusioned. I'm like, this is how life should be. Why isn't it this way? You know? That's self-will run riot, right? And after getting a sponsor and working through the steps and visiting that third step on honest to God on my knees, take this, take me, a year and a half later, I'm who I am right now, and it's only getting better. I work an active program today, and I wouldn't have it any other way. When I say for me, right, because this is experience, strength, and hope, right now, my hope is that I continue to sacrifice my will and just give it to God and just wake up every day to want to be in His will and surrender, because I have found through my own understanding and learning that everything I want to do is not good for me, because I'm a sick, twisted individual. I want nothing besides hedonistic values in me. And whatever makes me feel good, I want to excess. And so I need something outside of myself to make me better, because I believe a broken thing cannot fix a broken thing. And that's what's taken me this far now, is constantly surrendering my will, whatever is happening in my life. There's certain things that's happened in life that just continue to instill that, be it like work trauma, you know, and that used to eat my lunch all the time. I job hop. I think within the first 5 years of my marriage, or of being with my wife, I had like 6 different jobs, right? Can you imagine being my father-in-law? Like, dude, is this dude like really stable? Like, you want to marry this guy? That's crazy. One time, it was me and my brother, his wife, and my wife. This is how crazy I was, guys. I went to 3 different fast food drive-thrus because I didn't like the speed of one, the attitude of another, and the line of another, right? So like, and they just were sitting along for the ride. I'm like, not this one, not this one. Like, and I'm already in the line, guys, getting out of the line to go to another one. That's my insanity on my own will. That's where I take myself. And now with this program, I'll go any line. Let's go, guys. You know, I'm ready to sit in line and just live in the moment and be a part of whoever I'm with, and maybe make a friend along the way. Because now I'm a part of this journey, and it's not my journey, right? I'm just hoping God puts me on, keeps me going on His journey, right? And that's what I live for today, is being the best me that I can be. For my fellows, for my wife, for my family. Resentments, they get smashed quickly through that 10-step inventory, you know? I'm a firm believer that if you don't like someone, do something nice for them. And it goes away. For me, it goes away. I actively, if I don't like you at work, I'm going to do something nice for you. You probably won't even know that I did it, but I did it. And it makes me feel better. Because I don't like anybody taking up space in my mind, because I know they don't belong there, you know. But it's because y'all taught me that. I didn't know that. I thought everybody just walked around hating everybody. I thought, like, how do y'all deal with this? Like, this is insane. But I don't live that way anymore, and it's because of what I've learned here in AA and through those 12 steps, and being honest with another man, and being able to relinquish those past feelings and guilt. Right? I mean, I visit the past I used to be so scarred from, that I used to drink from, because I didn't understand what happened. Right? One of the most powerful 8 steps that I'd done I got to go visit my half-brother. My father had died of this disease about 2 years ago, and it was on my heart to go see him. And that whole journey back when I was like 21, 22, it was really scarring. There's a lot of things that happened. I was scared. But I had my brother with me, and we went on a mission, and I was able to see him and be there for him to show him love as we're hiking a mountain, and he's just cracking daddy daddies, you know, like because that's the alcoholism in him now, right? And now I'm of the person that can just show up and love him, and just tell him, like, look, I want you to know that I'm sorry, and want nothing in return, but it just asks, is there anything I can do for you? And now he's texting me every now and then, and now that's created a relationship. Without AA, I would never have opened that door again. You know, I would never have had the strength to open that door again. And I just can't be more grateful than to be here in a room with drunks 4 or 5 nights a week. It's the best, man. I don't get how people live any other way. Like, I would go insane. I did go insane. I did go insane, guys. I don't want to live any other way. I've built a beautiful home here, and I'm doing my best to keep whatever sparks around it out, because I don't want to burn this thing up again. I just want you guys to know that I love you, every single one of you, and I just thank you for being a part of this with me, and I couldn't ask for a better family. Thank you for letting me tell my story. Thank you.